Here. Are you logged into Skype?
What is your name?
Sometimes I have to launch Safari.
Prabhu's for everybody who's on Skype right now on ISKCON Hawaii. We're just getting set up with Ramir Maharaj. So if you could just give us a second. We started just a little bit early. Just saying Jai Radha Madhava. With you momentarily.
Ramananda, we're on 111. What text?
I'm sorry?
What text are we on, Prabhu? I'm sorry.
He'll announce in just 1 second. Hi, Krishna. So he just needs to log in. Oh, yeah, you just lit up. Okay, I'm going to call you. Jai Maharaj. Okay, you know what? So there's no echo. I'm going to go in another room. Because you can hear the echo, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to the other room. I'm here in spirit. Okay. So let me just give me a minute to make announcements like that. Get started. Just a second for Louis. Okay, I'm just going to shut the door so there's not too much echo. All right, welcome everyone. Hare Krishna. Everybody on free conferencing on Skype. Ramir Maharaj, we're very honored to have him speak today. We also have a studio audience of about, I don't know, I forgot how many 10 devotees are like that. We're here in broadcasting from Kona. From Brihannardiya Purana Mataji, and Mahesh Prabhu has very kindly honored us by letting us stay here. So, Maharaj, if you could go ahead and get started. We sang Jai Radha Madhava. If you could announce the verse. Right now we have about 24 devotees on Skype and free conference.
This morning we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, texts 18 and 19. So I'll read the verse and then I'll give you the translation. Varanindram puraskritya brahmanai sastu mangalai shankaturya ninadena rama goshena chadvita pratyujagmu rate rishta pranaya gata sadvasaha. Translation.
One of the verses, you can do a chant response with each line, and then.
Oh.
If you want.
We don't have to. Okay, I'll move ahead and go to the translation. Translation: they hastened to warn the Lord on chariots with brahmanas bearing flowers. Before them were elephants, emblems of good fortune. Conch shells and bugles were sounded, and Vedic hymns were chanted. Thus they offered their respects, which were saturated with affection. I just keep going, do I? Okay. Purport. The Vedic way of receiving a great personality creates an atmosphere of respect, which is saturated with affection and veneration for the person received. The auspicious atmosphere of such a reception depends on the paraphernalia described above, including conch shells, flowers, incense, decorated elephants, and the qualified brahmanas reciting verses from the Vedic literatures. Such a program of reception is full of sincerity on the part of both the receiver and the received. Translation again. They hastened toward the Lord on chariots with brahmanas bearing flowers. Before them were elephants, emblems of good fortune. Conch shells and bugles were sounded, and the Vedic hymns were chanted. Thus they offered their respects, which were saturated with affection. So in this section of the Bhagavatam, this chapter is entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka. So Lord Krishna had been away from Dwarka, and this city, Dwarka, we know, was created by the Lord in the sea after he was living in Mathura. And we had Jarasandha attack Mathura so many times, and King Kalayavana attacking Mathura. So Lord Krishna thought that, let me move the citizens completely to another place to put them in a peaceful condition. So by his mystic power, he created a whole city on an island in the ocean. I've been to Dwarka. And there's of course, the original city of Krishna, that, and according to Srimad Bhagavatam, was by the arrangement of the Lord, was submerged under the ocean after Lord Krishna left. But today they have a Dwarka on the coast, and they have a Beta Dwarka. It is an island. You take a ferry out to the island, and they have all temples of Krishna. And it's like the new Dwarka. So you can have been a couple of times there. But Krishna just created this by his mystic power, and it is said that when the citizens of Mathura were sleeping, the next morning they all awoke in different palaces at Dwarka, which is they went to sleep at night in Mathura and they woke up in Dwarka. And in Dwarka, if you know, like Mathura is in central India, and Dwarka is right on the west coast. So it's a distance of, I don't know how many 1,500 miles or whatever it is. So by Krishna's mystic power, he created all that. So now this is Krishna's coming back to Dwarka. This is after the battle of Kurukshetra. And Krishna had gone to spend some time with Yudhishthira Maharaj, the Pandavas, at Hastinapur in New Delhi. And for a few months he was staying there. So now he's coming back into Dwarka after long absence. And of course, Krishna is the object of everyone's affection, especially at Dwarka.
Haribol.
Krishna is the object of everyone's affection. And that, I was reading a statement by Srila Prabhupada where he says that Krishna is naturally the object of everyone's affection because nitya nityanam chetanas chetananam eka bhavanam yogivadikama. Because he is that one eternal who is providing all to all other eternals. So he is a part of us and we are part of him. And so very naturally, there will be affection between the part and the whole. So Prabhupada explained it in that way, that Krishna is naturally the object of everyone's affection. Of course, how the living entities experience that will be dependent upon their conditioning in the world, how they're affected by the modes of nature, whether they're in the sattva-guna or the raja-guna or the tamaguna. So if they're in the tamaguna, for example, that feeling of affection will not be able to be felt so much as, for example, the residents of Dwarka, who were all great devotees. Some of the residents of Dwarka had come with Krishna from the spiritual world to assist him in his lila. Others were devas, who Krishna had asked Lord Brahma to arrange that they take birth in families around India to assist him in his lila. So some of them were devas coming down. Some of them had come from the spiritual world with Krishna. Some of them were devotees given an opportunity to further advance in Krishna consciousness. They were from earth. They were from India at the time, and they were given an opportunity to come into Krishna's lila. So there was a mix. But all of them, of course, all of them were great devotees. And so for them, very natural to see Krishna. And Krishna is such a wonderful personality and very beautiful. So his longing, they were missing Krishna. So now he's coming back. And so this is where this shloka is picking up. that the Lord's coming forward. And they came out of the city to receive Krishna. And all auspicious types of paraphernalia. Welcome, Anand Krishna Priya. Hare Krishna. All auspicious paraphernalia. Conch shells were blowing. So conch shell is considered very auspicious. It's like at the start of the Aarti, we blow the conch shell. In any ceremony, we blow the conch shell. This is a very auspicious sound, especially for devotees. Of course, for those who are very atheistic, that the conch shell sounds something different. Just like on the battlefield, Kurukshetra, when Krishna blew his conch shell, the others were created fear in the hearts of the others. But nevertheless, in general, the conch shell is considered very auspicious. It's blown at all the yagyas and the ceremonies and so on. And elephants were brought. The elephant is considered hasti, considered very auspicious. And we have our elephant in Mayapur, where the elephant goes around on Saturday night, every Saturday. And the deities go on the back of the elephant. And the elephant goes right around the compound in Mayapur, and it's a big kind of festival, and they have kirtan and drums playing. Also, I remember a few times I went to Sri Rangam, and before Mangal Aarti, there's all music played before the Lord's woken up, then they bring a cow, and then when the doors open, they bring a cow. The first thing the Lord sees is a cow, and then an elephant. So these are considered very auspicious, cows and elephants. So the elephants were brought, bugles were sounded, Vedic hymns were chanted. So auspicious hymns from the Veda. We're chanting our kirtan, but there are all sorts of hymns and mantras that are chanted by very qualified Brahmins. So all this brings a very auspicious, and Prabhupada actually mentions this here, that the auspicious atmosphere of such a reception depends on the paraphernalia described above, including conch shells, flowers, flower petals. This is, when someone, an honored guest comes, you can throw flower petals over them. We used to do that for the Prabhupada from above and at their feet. When Krishna entered, there were the ladies up on the roofs and up high, and they were showering down flower petals. So you get all these flower petals coming down as you come in and at your feet, and garlands are presented. So this is the way for reception. And of course, this is there by way of now this. Two ways of understanding by way of culture in the ancient Vedic times. People, just by their culture, were from their childhood, they were taught that, when a guest comes to your house, you have to receive them very nicely and according to your means. If you may not be able to do all these things, have elephants greet them. Of course, you can generally blow a conch if you want. All these things, but according to your means, you have to receive them at least with kind words, and this is by way of culture. So there's by way of culture and education, people knew that you have to receive guests nicely in this way, and of course, here's mentioned by way of affection. If you love someone and you've got great affection for someone, naturally you're very happy to see them, and you greet them very warmly. Even as said, even if an enemy comes to your door, come to your house, you should receive them with kind words. Actually, I was talking to one of our guests who came to the temple, an Indian gentleman, and he said this: when in our culture, he was elderly, and he said, especially in our youth, we were always taught that that if a guest comes, that guest is supposed to be treated like God. This is how we were brought up. That guest is supposed to be treated like God when they come to your house. You look after them. So, and especially sadhus, and of course Krishna. Sadhus, they're treated. I remember a story actually, Prabhupada in Bombay many years ago, when it was called Mumbai. But when Prabhupada was there with Shyamasundara and some other devotees, they came out of the temple, and Prabhupada had an ambassador card. And if any of you have been to India, because there's not so many ambassadors around these days, but in the old days, practically all the cars were ambassadors. They're all the same shape, no matter if it was a 1970 model or 1980 model, they're all the same. It was just Mark 1, Mark 2, Mark 3. So Prabhupada came out with his party to get in his ambassador, and they got in the ambassador. And Shyamasundara got in the front seat, and he had the keys, and it was Sri Dikiti, actually, and he was in the back with Prabhupada. And he was starting it, and Prabhupada said, "What is the matter?" "Oh, something wrong with the car, Prabhupada. I can't start it." So he was trying for a little while, and he couldn't start it. "So I'll just see if I can get some help." So he jumped down and went off. And Prabhupada and Sri Dikiti were just sitting there. Then all of a sudden, two Indian gentlemen came over, and they started talking to Prabhupada through the window in Hindi, and it was going on. And Sri Dikiti said, what are they saying, Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, actually, we're talking very nicely with one another. And actually, he said, "Actually, this is their car." So that's why Shyamasundara couldn't start it. So this is their car, and they're just saying to me that they see who I am, I'm a sadhu, and they're just offering to drive me anywhere I want to go, because now I'm in their car. They actually see it as a great honor that they've come out and seen a sadhu in their car. So they feel honored. Now, if you're in a Western country and you come out and someone's sitting in your car, right? They're going to get out a gun or something, right? No matter if it's a sadhu or whoever it is, right? So Prabhupada used to say like that sometimes in the West, if someone goes on your property. There was another occasion also in Mayapur where Prabhupada and his disciples were walking in Mayapur through the rice paddy fields along, divisions in between. They were walking along like that, and they were walking for some time, and then all of a sudden, the devotee saw a man bowing down to Prabhupada and touching his feet. And then Prabhupada explained that, actually, we're walking through his field. This is his field. This land belongs to this farmer, and we're walking through the field. And so he's seen the sadhus are walking through his field, and he's offering his respects to them. And Prabhupada went on to say, now, if we had done this in a Western country, they would have brought out their guns. What are you doing on my land? Right? Who are you? Right? But he said, because in India, the culture's there, this, even though he's just a poor farmer, just has a small area of rice, he recognized that he's a sadhu who's walking through, and that's Prabhupada speaking. So this is the culture and the education is how to treat guests, how to recognize sadhus. There's a kind of a lost thing. Still in India, it's kind of a lost thing be respectful and polite and look after people. I think are the children taught these things these days? Are you taught like that? No. Well, the children in the Vedic times, of course, they were all taught like that. Be nice to people and receive them nice, look after them, whatever they want. And it's actually, and of course, it builds up a relationship and affection. Now, in the case of Krishna, as I said, he's the object of everyone's affection. And the citizens of Dwarka had so much love for Krishna. Whether it was cultural or whatever it was, they just within their hearts, they didn't even wait for him to come. They came out. And actually, that is the way to do it. You actually come out of your house. You come out of someone, especially if a sadhu or a great personality comes, you come out of your house. You wait outside your house, and then you bring them in your house. That is actually the proper etiquette to do like that. So you see here how they all came out, and in their chariots, and Brahmas reciting everything was going on. When Prabhupada came, we used to have the kirtan, right? And at the airport even. We used to go to, when Prabhupada flew in by plane, we used to go to the airport. And we didn't wait for him to come to the temple. We'd go to the airport and then the doors were open and closing, we'd be having the kirtan while in the concert. much to the consternation of the authorities of the airport. You know, we'd have a flower bills just throwing all, you know. So they were lost. We were making throwing flowers all over the place, but we were so happy to see Prabhupada come. And so we had a natural reception. We had the garlands put on, we were going to the kirtan. And of course, we did this one. In later years, we used to give them advance notice at least to where we're coming. So they go, okay. So anyway, so this is text number 18. And I'll move on to text 19. Varamukhyascha sataso yanastadarnotsuka la satkundala nirbata kapola varanasriya. The translation is, at the same time, many hundreds of well-known prostitutes began to proceed on various vehicles. They were all very eager to meet the Lord, and their beautiful faces were decorated with dazzling earrings, which enhanced the beauty of their foreheads. Prabhupada gives a long many prostitutes in great cities of India who are sincere devotees of the Lord. By tricks of chance, one may be obliged to adopt the profession, which is not very adorable in society. But that does not hamper one in executing devotional service to the Lord. Devotional service to the Lord is uncheckable in all circumstances. It is understood herewith that even in those days, about 5,000 years ago, there were prostitutes in a city like Gorkha, where Lord Krishna resided. This means that prostitutes are necessary citizens for the proper upkeep of society. The government opens wine shops, but this does not mean that the government encourages the drinking of wine. The idea is that there is a class of men who will drink at any cost, and experience that prohibition in great cities encouraged illicit smuggling of wine. Similarly, men who are not satisfied at home require such concessions, and if there's no prostitute, then such low men will induce others in the next have to meet Krishna, and included in that, and we have to remember that Dorka was a big city with many millions of people, so they all came out. That's a huge reception, huge thing, and so they all came. And so the prostitutes who they were working in Dorka, and they all came out, but here Prabhupada, they were devotees of Krishna also. And so he's saying that actually there are all different types of people in the world, and they work all different types of occupations, and some are socially acceptable, some maybe not socially acceptable. But that doesn't, whatever position you're in, that doesn't bar you from taking up spiritual life. You know, one shouldn't think that one is not able to engage in spiritual life, engage in Krishna consciousness, if one is in a certain position. I remember the story of Narad Muni and the maidservant's boy, wasn't it? That the boy was very attracted to Narad Muni, a great guru, great acharya in our life, and he wanted to become his disciple. So Narad Muni said, yes, what is your line, what is your gotra? And the boy said, I don't know. And so, well, go ask your mother. So he went back and asked the mother, and she said, oh, I'm just trying to remember the story. He asked the mother, what did they got? I don't know. And what is our gotra? What is our line? And this was told this was told, and the boy came back and told that to Narad Muni, and Narad Muni said that, well, go ask your father. So he went back, and the mother said, well, I don't know who your father is. So the boy went back, and he told Narad Muni, and what did your mother say? And my mother said that she doesn't know who my father is. So Narad Muni said, all right, I'll accept you as a disciple because you're truthful. Yeah, so he accepted it.
Yeah, I'm getting probably too. It's not that bad.
Anyway, so that's just a story to illustrate that point. But so no matter what position we're in, and Prabhupada mentions here that what does he say here? That by tricks of chance, and, due to, I know in India that you still, just even around Maipur, there's prostitutes who come, they're very poor, and they're sent by their families to earn money. They're so poor. That's a situation they find themselves in. But one shouldn't think, well, because I'm doing this, I can't be a devotee. And Prabhupada makes a point at the end of his purport by saying that if one just continues to try to be a devotee, then all good qualities will develop in such a person. And he says here, all the good qualities of the denizens of heaven will overtake them in their own way. So the good qualities will counteract by becoming a devotee and developing all spiritual qualities, godly qualities, that will overtake these other qualities that one, of course, by engaging in certain professions, you take on certain qualities. One shouldn't think that, well, I'm engaging in this profession, it's a pretty low activity, pretty low occupation, so then just do all other types of really simple activities as well, because one may think like that. One may think, well, I'm doing this, I might as well do that. I'm drinking, then I might as well take drugs as well, I might as well do the other thing, what the heck, I'm one thing is as bad as that, let me do them all. And one shouldn't think like that. One should know. You may be in a certain situation, but still try to be a devotee and still try to live a pure life. And in due course of time, Krishna will help you, and it may be seen, and I've seen it actually, that there was one devotee in Indonesia who he was working in a hotel with, and he just had to work with, he was in a pretty poor kind of family, and he was in a hotel serving meat and things like that, and so he was really he didn't like it, but he had to keep working, and he became a devotee, and he had to keep working in that job for a year or two. That somehow or other, Krishna made a nice arrangement for him where he asked again and again if he could do some other thing in the hotel. And then after some time, the management changed over, and then they changed his job to something else, which didn't involve having to serve meat or anything like that. So Krishna made a nice arrangement for him. But he kept being a devotee. That's the thing. He kept chanting and everything like that. So Prabhupada tells the story of Bilva Mangala Thakur, a great acharya, a brahmana, and Bilva Mangala was born into a very rich brahmana family in South India. And it's explained that in his previous life he was very elevated in his Krishna consciousness, but for some reason he fell down. He actually got to the level of bhava, which is like ecstasy. He's just the position just before divine love, prema. And but he fell down, and he came back in the next life in a very rich Brahmin family. But he became very attached to a prostitute by the name of Chintamani. And Prabhupada says, such is the case with rich boys. Sometimes they, because they're rich, they drink, they take intoxication, they run after women, So this was the case with, it doesn't mention any other woman, but he became very attached to Chintamani. And one time at when his father died, he was performing the Shraddha ceremony for his deceased father. And he was so anxious that day to see Chintamani that he hurried through the whole thing. Hurried through the whole ceremony. He was there and the other priests were there and he was telling them to hurry up and get it over because he wanted to go and see Chintamani. So he hurried through the whole ceremony to go and see Chintamani, but it was at a stormy night and it was raining down and he had to cross a river to go on the other side of the river to the home of Chintamani. So, you know, the river was raging and there was the boats weren't operating. It's too rough. So how am I going to get across? He was just determined to get over this. So he thought what he thought was a log floating in the river and he just grabbed a hold of the log and he thought, I'll just grab a hold of it and paddle and I'll float over on this log. But actually the log happened to be a corpse, a human corpse. And he was just so blinded to go and he didn't even notice it. He just thought it was a log. And so he just grabbed the log and he got over the gates were locked. So, you know, because Chintamani, he'd go and see Chintamani every night. And Chintamani thought, well, he's not going to come tonight. So she liked that there was a big wall around the house, a big gate, a big high wall. So she just locked the gates and went to bed. So, anyway, he was determined. So he had to climb over this wall and he saw what he thought was a rope. And he grabbed it and he scrambled up over the wall, but actually it was a snake. But he was so blinded to get to see it, he didn't even know. He just grabbed the snake and he climbed over the wall. And there's some that mentioned that he fell over the wall and he hurt himself really badly. And he got to the top and he fell over and he hurt himself. He was kind of injured. And he was banging on the door and she was surprised she let him in. You know, how are you coming? There's a storm outside. And he had to kind of like some, he bought some food for her, which was kind of in tatters. anyway, why have you come? She said to him, you're so attached to me. If you had the same amount of attachment as you have for me, for Krishna, then she was a devotee. And if you had the same amount of attachment as you have for me to Krishna, you would be a great devotee. So he had, just at that moment, he had a realization. And it's mentioned by Prabhupada that Bilba Magala Thakur's he wasn't known as Bilba Magala Thakur at that, I forget his name. He was known later by the name Bilba Magala Thakur when he was in Vrindavan. But anyway, his former guru had spoken through the prostitute, using the words of the prostitute. So he just had a realization right then and there. It was like a thunderbolt. And he just thanked her very much for giving him the realization of his foolishness. And he left. And she told him to go to Vrindavan. You should go to Vrindavan. And there you can develop your Krishna consciousness in the birthplace of the holy Dharma of Vrindavan. So he went, and he was going along the way and going along the way, but the old habit came back. He saw a very beautiful woman walking along the road, and he started to follow her. So she went home, and she was the wife of a Brahmin, a high-class Brahmin. And she went home, and she told her husband that someone followed me. the husband went out, and he saw him, and he could see that this man was a kind of a high-class Brahmin. And so he invited him in. And yes, this shows you again how you receive people. This man was following his wife. So he invited him in. How can we help you? He said, I am very, your wife is very beautiful and I'm very attracted to your wife. So the man said, if you're that, you're a high class Brahmin, then you're our guest. So therefore I must offer you whatever you want. And he told his wife, get ready and please him. So she did it. And as she came to him, he had a realization again, what am I doing? And he said to her, Manaji, can I have your hair, please? And she said, what for? I said, no, I've got some business. And he said that he took those hairpins and put out his eyes. He said, these eyes have been causing me all this trouble. He made himself blind by the hairpins. There's some discrepancy in the story whether he did it right there or he did it later on in Vrindavan. He took the hairpins and carried on to Vrindavan. He did it in Vrindavan, actually. So I've read two different versions of that. So anyway, he ended up in Vrindavan and he was blind. And he sat in great penance of his foolishness and cultivated his Krishna consciousness so much so that actually it said that he was sitting and thinking of Krishna. And then a cowherd boy came to him. And said, you are sitting here practicing such austerity. Aren't you hungry? I can, if you like, I can supply you milk. And he said, who are you? And he said, I'm just a cowherd boy of a nearby village here, and I've been seeing you here. So, you know, if you want some milk, I can, oh, yes. And so the boy would bring him milk every day. And so after some time, you know, began to think, who is this boy? And he began to get the realization that this boy is Krishna. And he said one time, are you Krishna? Went out to touch him. So the boy used to give him milk and play flute. And so and then are you Krishna? And he held his hand and Krishna held his hand, but then he playfully removed his hand and ran away laughing. And Bhuv Mangala, he said at that time, he said, you can run away from my hand, but you can't run away from my heart. This is one of his favorite, one of his well-known statements. You can run away from my hand, but you can't run away from my heart. But by that time, he'd been practicing tapasya. And they said that he got initiated there by Somagiri that got the name Lilasuka. And later on, Bhuv Mangala Thakur, he was known. He lived in the Vrindavan area for 700 years. He lived a long time, 700 years. And he became ecstatic in love of Krishna. And he wrote many works. We have Krishna Bhajanamrita, or Karnamrita, sorry, Krishna Karnamrita. It was a famous work of his which describes the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, conjugal affairs of Radha and Krishna, and the gopis. That Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu picked up that book. So it just shows that, yes, how he was helped by Chintamani and how he, Lord Mangala Thakur, later on he rectified his position and became such a great devotee that Krishna himself would go and give him milk in Vrindavan. So here Prabhupada says, quoting from Bhagavad Gita 9:32, even the low-born chandalas, those born in the family of unbelievers, prostitutes, shall attain perfection of life if they take shelter of unalloyed devotional service to me. Because in the path of devotional service, there are no impediments due to the degraded birth. The path is open for everyone who agrees to follow it. So this is a very... I remember another story of a prostitute who was ended up a devotee. She was... you want to hear this story? Okay, so there was one brahmana. His name was Sushama. And but he was very mean. He didn't live like a brahmana. He was very mean to people. And he was very kind of debauched. And when he died, he... had to go to the Yamaraj and be punished by Yamaraj. And then in the next life, he came back as a bull. And he came back as a bull and a man purchased him and used to work him really hard and make him make the bull, you know, pull a car and load it up with all sorts of things every day. And one day he loaded it up so much, with so much weight, bull was struggling like anything. All the people of the village were, you know, complaining, why are you, you know, making the bull work like this? Look at him, can't you see he's struggling? But that man was just very mean also. So I guess he had to get his reaction to take birth and be under a mean man. He was mean, so now he had to be under a mean man. Anyway, so people were complaining, and then, but still he was whipping the bull, and the bull fell down and went unconscious because of extreme exhaustion. So then all the people came around and complaining, and look what you've done. And then that bull died as they were talking. The bull just expired. So they were all sorry. And one man said, oh, if I have any pious credits, I want to, you know.
Not allowing alcohol didn't work. And they had to, again, allow it. So better to have it controlled by the government. Better to allow it in a controlled way than try to stop it altogether. So, but the thing is, the main thing is that that one, whatever situation one finds themselves in, one should always try to be a devotee. That's the main message, I think, that Prabhupada is conveying here. So, all right, now, do I continue or will I stop there? And if anyone has any questions?
Sure. Yeah, that's generally when we stop and ask for questions or comments.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll stop saying if anyone has any comments or questions.
No, you remember that story. He lived a long time. Yeah. 700 years, you said. So what yuga is this?
I haven't read specifically what yuga was, but it must have been somewhat with that one. You know, in this life, in this Kali Yuga, people live up to in the former age of 1,000 years.
Right.
So perhaps it was.
Yeah.
No, actually, no, I'm wrong there because. No, Bhumangala Thakur. No, I'm wrong. Bhumangala Thakur was in the 14th century.
Correct.
Yeah. He was in the 14th century. So he just lived an unusually long life for this age. But he lived 700 years. It said that he's living.
He wrote so many books. So is he dictating them to someone else? How is he writing books?
Whether he came to me, he was blind. There must have been someone else.
He must have dictated.
Because, I mean, he was initiated by Samagiri, so others must have been there, and he must have been keeping association with others. He was living in Vrindavan.
Sure.
So so many other devotees come there to see him. They were living here for a long time, so you would expect that he would have a lot of speculation. So obviously someone had ended. I don't know if he would have ended. He wouldn't have ended.
Mother Gandhari, you had a question?
I just wanted to share this also regarding hospitality. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for your wonderful class. You're mentioning about how when the guest comes, whatever they ask, the host has to supply and give away in the Vedic culture. So there was this story of Jalaram, because he started the food distribution program in Gujarat, and he was a devotee of Lord Ram. So Lord Ram personally came to test him on his determination. And so he came and asked him for his wife, because he came as a sadhu, and then the sadhu said, I am alone, I have a problem for cooking, so why don't you give me a wife? So Jalaram said, yes, sure, so take the wife away and you're welcome, it will be my pleasure to serve the guest like that. But he knew nobody else would ask except it would be his own lord. So he was a Ram Bhakta, and then sure enough, this sadhu and the woman starts walking just towards the end of the village, and then all of a sudden the sadhu disappears and gives a carrier bag which is never emptied, and he's been continuing his food distribution. And even now, if you go in Gujarat, in that village, in the town, it's called Virpur, and they have so much funds coming that they have to refuse donation. They have so much funds because it's continuous food distribution there. People can go and see. It's Jalaram, and there was a washing stick that he was given as well as the carrier bag, and they put it up on display for people to see. So that was thing about hospitality that he knew that only my dear Lord Ram would ask, nobody else would, and he'd given his wife, and of course then she came back because Lord Ram disappeared. So that Jalaram, and you can see so many Gujaratis all over the world, they actually worship him, but they actually take him as Karma Kanda because they ask for material benefits from Jalaram instead of trying to follow his example of being a pure bhakta. So that's the story of Jalaram, and it goes along with the, what you were saying about hospitality. So, thank you.
I have a question.
Yeah.
We had a discussion some time ago about when devotees are in a position where they have to participate in ball, sinful activities for their job. You mentioned this one devotee that was working at a restaurant. You know, he was distributing meat, serving out meat.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking about those kind of things. Meat, alcohol, you know, sometimes they have a job, sometimes it's involved in sinful activities.
Mm-hmm.
And the point that I have made was that in my own experience that, yeah, you may be in a position where you have to be performing some sinful activities that you can't avoid, but we shouldn't think that we're not going to suffer from that. That's been my experience, that even though, you know, I couldn't get out of it, and like, I give an example, I was with my father, and he asked me to open some meat for him, help him out, because he couldn't do it. He was, you know, arthritis like that, and I just couldn't avoid it, so I went and, you know, gave him some fish, and I was sick. I mean, I was sick for like 3 weeks after that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I got like a really bad reaction. I didn't want to do it. I just did it, but I got a reaction. So my conclusion was that, you know, if you're in that kind of situation, okay, fine, do it, but you're still going to suffer if you're a devotee.
I don't know if you can conclude it's a general principle that, you will. I mean, if you're doing it, and you could be avoiding doing it. In other words, you know you could be doing something else which is, doesn't involve meat, and it's quite easy for you to swap over to something. But you continue to do that, then you know, I would say yes, you're going to suffer some reaction from that. But if you're in a situation which is just, you just can't get out of, whether or not you're going to suffer, that would be up to Krishna. It may have been you, in my opinion, that Krishna just decided just to use that. It's hard for us to conclude whether what Krishna did, whether that was a reaction to put, as far as your opening the meat, or whether it was a reaction to something else. So for us to conclude that, you know, I'm not going to go there, but going on what the Shastras and going on these stories here, someone is look at the prostitute in the Sushama, she was a prostitute, but you know, whether she got suffering, whether she got reaction, and so on and so forth. So I would say if someone is very sincere, but they're just in a situation that can't avoid whether how much reaction they're going to get, if they get reaction at all, up to Krishna, and it would be much less or minimal than someone who knowingly, and they could avoid it altogether if they really wanted to. Understand? That's my position on it. Because Krishna knows everything. Krishna knows he's in your heart, and he knows your situation, and whether it's just. So you think he's. So my view is that he's so unkind that you're just forced, that he's going to punish you anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he can do anything he wants.
Yeah.
He may want it. He may do that.
You remember the discussion we had.
He makes the rules and he can break the rules.
Yeah. So so it's up to him. So I remember when Prabhupada said that, you know, there was one devotee asked Prabhupada about, you know, at the time of death, you know, you might have been practicing Krishna consciousness so long, but may say you're in a car accident and, you know, the car goes off, and at that point you don't think of Krishna. I mean, you don't go back home, back to God. And what will happen to you? And Prabhupada actually answers, I don't think Krishna's so unkind that after so many years of devotional service, and at that point you just didn't happen to think of Krishna, he's so unkind that he's going to really punish you. Because, you know, for 1 minute you didn't think of Krishna, you didn't think of him for 1 minute. So that's the way Prabhupada answers. He said, don't think Krishna's so unkind like that. He's a person just like we're person. He's a supreme person. He knows everything. He deals with everyone in a very expert way. That's like just suitable to the situation. It is. Any further comments or questions?
For our Skype crowd, we're still online if anybody here has a question.
I could just comment further on the situation that Ramananda had. I remember that class. I remember the conversation we had afterwards. And Ramananda, my position was the same as Maharaj's. I didn't agree with you. I don't remember if I ever discussed this afterwards, but just shortly after that was when Radhanath Maharaj came. And we went out sailing, and I asked him that question. I told him what had happened to you and asked him what was his opinion. And his opinion was also the same, that if, you know, you're a householder and you were in that situation, and he also didn't think that this illness for weeks, you said you were sick. It doesn't sound like that would have been some reaction that Krishna would have inflicted upon you, because it's just a situation that you were sort of an unavoidable situation. It didn't sound consistent. I mean, we'll never know for sure. We can, and it's not unhealthy to philosophically speculate about these things, but it doesn't sound at all reasonable to me. That's, you know, my opinion, and as well, it doesn't sound that Krishna would cause you to suffer because of doing something that was really, for all intents and purposes, unavoidable. You could have said, no, I'm not going to open it for you. And that wouldn't have been so good either, because, you know, you're trying to cultivate and do what you can to uplift your family spiritually. And
well, I wasn't so much referring to my own individual case. I was just giving that as an example because I've experienced it. I was just talking about a general principle that if devotees are in a situation where they have to perform something as simple, should they expect to get a reaction from them?
I wouldn't. If you remember, you're qualifying that. You're saying where they have to. You know, it's not. It's you use the word have to. So if it's unavoidable, I think Krishna will definitely take that very much into consideration. That's just my throwing in another opinion.
Yeah, that's a good point. I tend to agree with that. Narahari, is it? Hare Krishna, is it Narahari there?
Jai Swamiji.
Hare Bo, Narahari.
Dandavats, Maharaj.
I missed your association from last time.
And as well.
Catch up again.
Any way we can get you over to the gathering aisle.
Matt,
take you sailing.
I'm scheduled to be somewhere else, and they've advertised me, so I can't change my schedule at this point. But next time I come, for sure.
I'll hold you to that.
Very good.
Is any other questions for Maharaj?
I just wanted to thank Maharaj for a wonderful class. I had questions that you've answered. And I wanted to say that in regards to working a job, I think that, you know, it's very hard to find a job that doesn't, somehow or another, is pure or like 100%, unless you're working for a devotee, you know. I was working as a nurse aide in a North Community Hospital when Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj had ended up in the hospital there, and I was taking care of him. And I asked him, I think it was one morning after I had stayed up all night taking care of him. And I had asked him, Maharaj, why do I have to work And he looked at me and he goes, well, what else do you want to do? And I thought that was like a very, you know, obvious question. What I want to do is serve Krishna all day. I don't want to work. And his answer to me was, this is your service. And he told me, your presence in the room of your patients elevate their consciousness. So, you know, I think that it's all individual things, and we all have to do whatever our service is.
That's a good question.
You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, a really important verse in the 18th chapter, where Krishna says, "Sarvaram bahi doshena dumenagnir inavrita," that just as fire is, you know, as fire is covered by smoke, similarly, you know, every endeavor in this world is covered with some sort of fault. And Krishna says, therefore, Arjuna, one should not give up work born of his nature. So just because there, you know, some apparent fault in dealing in this world, sarvaramba, all sarvaramba hidoshena, there's faults in everything practically that we do in this world. Look careful enough and you'll find some discrepancy. Mm-hmm. But we can't stop. And Krishna will adjust.
That's a good point. And I think that, yeah, you're right. Everything, any occupation, and even in the Varnashram system, they would, the Brahmanas would engage in their activities and the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas. And there's all this, even in those days, there was mention of imperfections. And therefore, by following Varnashrama, they would be engaging in their occupation simultaneously, performing different ceremonies, attending functions, performing ceremonies to purify any contaminations that they had received due to their occupation. So that's why, you know, the ancient system of Varnashrama is very important, because even in those times, there was contamination in occupation. What to speak of now, you know, in the Kali Yuga, in the present day, and it's true what Manaji said about, you know, doing her service and doing anyone doing any occupation is just so. Therefore, we do our work to the best of our ability. I mean, if we can pick an occupation that's relatively minimal in contamination, that would be the best. But so whatever the situation, we just do it. But then we have to engage in devotional practices.
Mm-hmm.
And be sincere in our practice of Krishna consciousness. And as Narahari said, that Krishna will make all adjustments. And one can advance, even in that situation, one will advance in devotional service. Krishna knows your heart, and you'll be purified of any contamination from your occupation, if there's any difference.
Mara, you have time for one more question from me?
One more. Okay.
I'd like to ask a question. I don't know if anybody can hear me.
Can you hear Mother Ermila?
Can you hear me?
Is that affirmative?
Yeah.
I'll put on my stadium voice. I can just come over there with this microphone. Is that what you're talking
about?
Okay. All right. So I just wondered, Mara, if you could speak a little bit on how we understand that these prostitutes were pure devotees, and yet we're very strongly preaching that if you have a illicit sex life, you can't advance in Krishna consciousness. How do you put those two things together?
Well, again, it comes back to my point of force of circumstance, as far as, you know, you're talking about, like, you know, the prostitutes of Dwarka. They're in a unique situation. I don't know how they, obviously they're devotees, they're in Dwarka, so their position is very unique. So, but ordinarily, you know, One is by force of circumstance. One is, so if it's actually a fact that by force of circumstance you have to do that, but if you're doing it not because of that, then there we, you know, a real blockage to advancement in devotional service. But Prabhupada makes the point quite strongly that, you know, the prostitutes were devotees and were advanced in Krishna consciousness. He actually calls them unalloyed devotees.
Yeah.
He calls them unalloyed devotees of Krishna,
yeah,
and they're prostitutes. So obviously they're making advancement in Krishna consciousness. So their circumstances were like that, but that doesn't give excuse to someone else. Their circumstances not like that, but then they do that. So for them it's a different situation, different scenario. But by force of circumstance, I think that's the point we have to, you know, emphasize. Does that answer your question?
So it's very easy to look at other people's lives and pass judgment on them and say, well, this person's done this thing, this person's done that thing, therefore they can't be a very good devotee, and we shouldn't associate with them, we shouldn't hear from them. What do we do? We're supposed to judge, not judge in terms of I'm better than you, but we're supposed to judge in terms of association, according to Rupa Goswami. You know, associating with different classes of devotees. So what do we do if we see that in someone's life they're engaging in some activity that's sinful and yet they're a devotee? What do we do as far as how we choose to associate with them? How do we figure this out? If these people were pure, unalloyed devotees. So we don't want
to
offend anybody at the same time we don't
but
want
I think to, you have to separate this situation of the prostitute's walker from what you're talking about. You're talking about something else, you know, the devotees, general devotees who, you know, have got, some areas of activity that are not, very advantageous for advancing in spiritual life. So you have to judge each case individually, you know, and if that person is trying to overcome that, but if it's another person is just going right into it, then you're still kind of there for them. If it's up to them, you know, you can't force anyone. Now I don't know what you're talking about. What your mentality should be? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Your mentality should be you're there to help anyone, but it's up to them whether they associate. You know, someone who's going headlong into materialistic life that you may not want to associate that closely with. Someone who's in doing a lot of material life but trying to be a devotee, you probably want to give a little bit more association to. So you have to judge each case on its own merits and really take the advice of other devotees on it and come to your own conclusion. So we see the example, and also we can see by the example of how Prabhupada dealt in those situations. When devotees were like that, how we dealt with them and what sort of association. I mean, I saw Prabhupada as very forgiving and no matter what they were doing. But then again, if someone was a rascal, Prabhupada could be very strong about that. But in general, someone who was having problems, whether they were... He always encouraged, actually, that's what I saw. No matter, you know, if they were full on or half on, whatever they were doing, he always encouraged them. But if someone was creating a disturbance to other devotees because of that or because of anything else, then Prabhupada was quite strong about that. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Can
we end it? I want to ask one last question.
That's a little mercy.
Okay.
You know, there's we had a discussion about the prostitutes. That any of the regulative principles, you know, the point of Krishna consciousness that we need to eradicate this for ourselves individually. But as far as society-wise, Prabhupada says things in depending on what context. You know, almost like things like the opposite thing. Here he's saying that, you know, there's these prostitutes even in Dwarka. You know, so what it means is in society, you're going to find people that want to break the regular principles, they want to drink, want to prostitution, etc. Just accept it in society. You find that large. But in another occasion, Srila Prabhupada was saying in the mood of Maharaj Pariksha, you know, when he saw Kali, and he was going to kill him. So in one lecture, he was saying that if there's a pious king, that whenever they see things like illicit sex in his kingdom, kill him.
Goodness.
Intoxication, kill him. You know, like that.
In the mood of Maharaj, yeah, he was talking in a particular mood. But
so
on a practical level,
okay.
You know, what Prabhupada meant. I mean, you know, when he's talking is one thing, and he's talking in a certain mood that, it, you know, perhaps emphasize a point. But when you read something in a purport, that's something you have to take very, very seriously. You know, so, I mean, it's not that we don't take what Prabhupada says seriously, but you have to be careful to understand that in a proper context. And you know, I don't know, you know, what you're referring to exactly.
Well, if we had political power, would our goal be is when a society is set up that we would actually like to eradicate these things? You know, just like the Taliban. You know, I hate to give an example like this, but the Taliban, you know, whenever there's...
We're not going to be like the Taliban.
No, but I'm...
That's a bad example.
We
get that again. Yeah, no, we shouldn't be so fanatical like that. But yeah, we can go according to Prabhupada. We have to. Not, we're not really interested in power of government, or that, but you know, as advisors. In the case in Prabhupada, that he wrote to Gandhi, Indira Gandhi, points he Prabhupada wrote down certain points about, you know, how, you know, that he wanted to meet with her, and he didn't get the opportunity then, but. And he had certain points he wanted to talk to her about. And one of them was about, I think this very topic, and he actually said they abolish prostitutes. But what does he mean by abolish prostitutes? Because here he's saying have it controlled. Does he want to abolish a certain type of prostitution, but have it controlled by the government in another way?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we have to go through proper statements and then put them all together and then get together and discuss it all very... in-depth kind of conversation and come to a conclusion if you want to go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
The Taliban.
Destroy the democracy.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. I think that, you know, I'm working with the public and I work in the unit in the hospital where we deliver babies. And I would say 90% of the women are prostitutes that come in. But, you know, if you treat them with kindness and compassion and you are take care of them very nicely, then people will watch the way you are. And that's how they will learn about devotional service and devotees. Because when you're kind to them and you're compassionate and friendly with them, not that you're going to engage in the same type of activities they are, but you show them true compassion and true, you know, caring, then they will want to know who you are and what do you do and what do you believe in and, I, you know, like this, instead of being harsh. Because not everybody can follow the four regulated principles. And if we can, I think we should be very grateful in our hearts that we are able to. And not judge others for not being able to.
Yes, no, I agree with you. Well, we always have to, and that goes to the point I made about seeing Prabhupada's example, and that's what I saw with Prabhupada in the context of Prabhupada, how he dealt with his own disciples, how he dealt with the people in general.
Yes.
He was always kind to them, always compassionate, always willing to help. So we have to have that mood.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take, see, the disciple. Especially has to try to take the mood of their group. You know, there can be so many things said in Shastra. We have to know about those things according to our group, you know, the interpretation given by our guru, and we have to take the mood of the group. So what would Prabhupada's mood as far as all of this? That I think that has to be given very. And what
none of you were saying there, and you know, I agree with the kind of the attitude as far as that's concerned.
I want to comment on Ramananda's question. If politically we had the clout or the power to abolish things like intoxication, etc., I don't think that would be our purpose. Even, you know, Maharaj Prickett allowed these things to come in because it's the age of Kali, and it's all, in one sense, all part of Krishna's plan that people get to engage in these activities, and you know, eventually they become frustrated by it. But our business is to try to abolish the mentality within people, the desire to take these things by spiritual purification. To remove them out of society isn't going to do any good, because people will find other outlets to, you know, fulfill their sinful desires. But we have to abolish or purify within people's hearts, not externally remove things. That would be my point.
Yeah, very good point.
That's actually exactly what Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that you read.
Yeah.
He says if you don't have things that are government controlled, people will find other ways of doing it, and they'll spoil the whole society.
That's right.
It's exactly what Prabhupada said. So just to remove the things externally, it's like a balloon where you squeeze it one place and it pops out something else, and that doesn't solve nothing.
Chai, Ramai Swami Ki Jai.
Thank you all. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Swamiji.
Prabhu,
very much.
Technical difficulties will be better tomorrow. Guaranteed.
Ramananda?
Yes.
Is class starting early while Maharaj is here?
We started 5 minutes early.
Okay.
That's okay.
Thank you.
And Mother Urmila is giving class tomorrow. Maharaj is giving class in the evening, and Bhagavad Gita class.
Right.
Oh, wait a minute. Today's Monday. You're giving Bhagavad Gita class tonight. Maharaj is giving class tonight. All right. Thank you very much, Prabhu.
Ramananji, call me after class.
I will. Okay. Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, everyone. Hare Bol.
Yeah.
Hare Bol.